Hi, this is Clay Inferno, and you're listening to I Think This Is Great. I Think This Is Great! Exclamation point with Clay Inferno is the full name of the show. And it's an interview podcast about people doing and being their best. We talk about doing compassionate work, making books, working on teams, getting over hurdles, doing great things, even when the chips are down and you just, frankly, don't want to do anything. It's a little bit of a tech podcast. But mostly, this is an interview show where I talk to some of the most fascinating people that have come into my life. And hopefully I get to meet some new friends along the way. So welcome, and please let me know what you think of I Think This Is Great with Clay Inferno by joining the conversation on social media with the hashtag ITTIGpod. Or you can reach out to me directly at CLAYNFERNO, Clay Inferno. There is no I in that Inferno, at Clay Inferno, clayinferno.com. But you are here at ithinkthisisgreat.com. So do me a favor, once the show launches, please go on to iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts and leave me a rating, and please spread the word. I want people to know about the show and the amazing people that I have on it. So we will see you on the internet.
This is LJ, and I think this is great.
Hey, this is Luke O'Neill, and you're listening to I Think This Is Great.
I think your business is great, and I think you're listening to Clay Fernal. Wait, that was backwards.
I'm going to use that one.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training. Proudly present, No Borders, No Picks, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your king, maybe not given Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. And today, we've got a special episode lined up as we will be joined by the team over at Dirty Beast Games. These are the guys responsible for the upcoming video game Feral Frontier, which was legit the only title I found worthy enough at this year's Boston Festival of Indie Games to actually write about. And these guys just so happen to be living just one city over from where I'm at. So you're going to hear about Dirty Beast Games' origins and what they've been working on for Feral Frontier. It's a massive interview, so let's not waste any more time and dive into this week's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and would like to support these artists, you can grab just about all their music on cdjapan.co.jp, Yes Asia, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And on this week's episode, we're actually going to spin a bunch of artists that myself and the Dirty Beast Games crew found ourselves talking about after the interview. Bands of the noise rock, punk, and alt-punk movements of Japan, America, and the rest of the world. So we're going to start off with some Melt Banana, a band I haven't played in a very long time. And it's actually been a while since we've heard from these guys, so hopefully we'll hear some new album news in the not-too-distant future. From their record, Teeny Shiny, this is Cub, Not Cube.
Yeah.
From their 2005 album Pink, that was Boris with Six, Three Times. In my honest opinion, they're very top tier record. If you don't have Boris in your collection, Pink is the album you should absolutely start out with. And now, folks, let us be transported to the Bit Bar in Salem, Massachusetts, as you hear the first part of my interview with Dirty Beast Games.
First off, let's go around the table, introduce one another.
Sure.
Hello.
All right, so yeah, I'm Josh, Josh Cheney, the artist, I guess. I do the art, the animation, illustrations, and just a lot of, like, I guess, the kind of story or the world, the setting. So I'm kind of like an art director, so to speak. I kind of come up with visions of what it will kind of look like, the world will look like, and the concepts, I guess, of the characters, roughly speaking, and then we try to iron them out from there, I guess.
Yes. Cool. I'm Ken McHugh. I'm the programmer and sound designer, composer, I guess. Also, I guess, level designer. I don't know. It's like a jack-of-all-trades sort of thing, kind of like Josh is. So, I don't know.
Very cool. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of overlap. Yeah.
I'm Felicia Santos. I do marketing, web. Pretty much any time you're interacting with someone on social media or email, it's going to be me. So I represent the voice, I guess.
And I'm going to be like, you said what?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get that reference.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. So my first question is, where did Dirty Beast Games get its start?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we used to hang out. You went to Montserrat School of Art. I don't know how R-rated this is, but like I used to like sell pot to everybody over there.
Yeah.
And
we're an uncut podcast, yeah. So you're good.
Work, beep it out.
Yeah, just beep it out.
I used to sell.
Yeah. That's where I met Josh over at used to hang out at a place called School Street.
It was like a party house. I was dating a girl who lived there, and people were just always hanging out there partying and stuff, It wasn't really like my favorite scene. I just happened to be dating that girl, and I was like, not a big partier or whatever, you know. So, just kind of like was one of those things we just happened to run into each other.
Yeah, we, yeah. I don't
know. And then you hang out there, and then we both,
because like I remember you had expressed like, I want to try to get into game design. I'm like, yeah, me too. And we're like, do you know how to do that? And we're like, no.
Yeah.
So like eventually, like a couple of years later, I actually started legitimately getting into it, and then I was like, you know, I would start to talk to people and be like, dude, I made this like square move around on the screen, and people were like, yeah.
I'm gonna stop.
So I'd be like, right. So I was like, alright, I need someone to like do this with, so
yeah.
So I like don't drive myself like insane.
Yeah, and I was actually doing my own thing too. I was like working on this like little game prototype that was kind of like you were this little boy with a bow and arrow, and you'd like run around and you'd be able to shoot it in all 360 degrees and while you were running around, you know, and do a little Mega Man slide, a little bit of wall jump action. It was kind of like, you know, a Mega Man kind of thing. But
it sounds like Lawn Darts, the video game.
Lawn Darts? Is that a video game? I don't even know about that. it was like a simple thing, and I just had happened to have made that as well. And then when you were like, hey, what, you know, yeah, let's do something, I was like, and I remember I think I sent that over to you. I was like, yeah, this is something that I was doing.
Right. Your guy was like constantly running. Didn't he have no idle state?
Yeah, I think I had no idle.
He was just like running.
He was always running, maybe. Yeah.
I remember you had like an issue with like the arc of the jump. Like you'd be like, oh, I try to get this guy to jump. Well, it's always like my biggest, this, like he's like a rock, you know? He's like jumps up and he's like,
I think I did get my jump to feel good. I think the biggest issue was it was a mouse and keyboard design, and I was trying to figure out how to deal with. How do I translate that controls to a controller? And that was where I had my biggest issue. And abandon it, because, you know, I'm not much of a programmer.
But I did steal your code. You had some good, bow and arrow code.
Yeah.
I stole that at one point to, like...
Do the trails or something.
Yeah, we were originally going to add, like, a bow and arrow to the game that we're making now.
Oh, yeah, you took the bow, yeah.
No, kind of. I mean, not the one that we're making now, but I guess the version one. Probably won't make it into the game now. But yeah, we had, like, a version one of this. It would be fun to kind of, like... Just throw that out there sometime. Like, just throw out, like, build one
the way
that it is.
Oh, dude, how's that?
I'll make it be, like, the warp zone in Sonic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty pretty crazy. It's pretty rough around the edges.
Yeah, yeah. No, so, I mean, I guess, like, that was maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah, probably 5 years ago. Yeah, it was a long
time maybe ago longer.
That we didn't really accomplish anything.
Maybe six or seven years ago. We've known each other for like a decade at least.
Yeah.
Probably a little over.
Which is nuts. I'm old.
I know, right? Time flies. And we kind of he's like, hey, let's do something. So then we like would mess around and kind of like had no real direction and just kind of do all these things. And
right. Because we're both learning. We're still learning. You know, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of do, I guess.
I mean, on the art end, I think like it's, you kind of can figure it out faster once you know, and then you just kind of make yourself look better or whatever. But yeah, with programming, I think you're always going to be just figuring shit out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it's always going to be. But so we did that. We would just kind of mess around and be on and off. Like there'd be like half of a year we'd be like playing, sending things back, and then all of a sudden we'd like half a year just like not do anything for a while, right?
Oh yeah.
And then there's like an endless amount of emails that are just like long-winded, unorganized, just paragraphs of text. Mostly me, like just like writing every idea I can think of.
Yeah.
And just sending them over and not making any major progress, right?
Like it
just
because that's the way it goes. Like, you know, you'll say a million ideas, and I'll kind of like latch on to like one,
right?
But like, all right, because like I don't know, as a programmer, it's just like, all right, this is
things,
it's like,
yeah,
all right, how long is this gonna take to actually like output?
You know? Right, and then some of the ideas they have conflicts that you don't know yet that you're gonna find out later when you implement them.
Right, that's true.
Oh, you know, yeah. So not everything's the greatest idea when it sounded cool or whatever. But yeah, so then what happened? What really happened was just like a little over half a year ago, Felicia came to me and she's like, "Hey, Boston Fig is opening. You know, they're opening for submissions for the next Boston Fig, and we have been to Boston Figs in the past just as like visitors.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Three times we've been there.
Yeah. And you know, we saw a bunch of games, and remember, we were thinking like, we always think like, man, we could do better than a lot of these games. Like, we could do this. We could be here. You know, and every time showing up and not having something and seeing things that are there that we could do better, it just was like a slap in the face that made it feel like, all right, no excuses. I have to bring something. And so she's like, Boston Fig, it's coming up. Gotta do something. And so I was like, oh man, we can't miss this if we're let's.
And I was almost like, nah. I was like, you came to me and you're like, yeah, you want to do this? And I was like, no, my wife, my wife's just pregnant, and like, I don't know, I got a lot going on.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go. Like, let's just do it. Like,
yeah.
And we just like hammered down.
How long before was it? 2 or 3 months or something?
We started in March, I think. I think it was March, right?
It felt like we had like not even 2 months to make something from scratch.
Yeah, it took 2 months to create a demo, which was then going to be decided on by the Boston Fig team.
Yeah.
So whatever we submit by that point.
And what I said was like, we're going to make it in, but we're not going to win anything.
Right, and which you were correct.
Because
we saw some of the things that made it in. We're like, dude, we can at least, you know, with like something pretty simple and at least drawn to look
at. But I was pleasantly surprised like how far we made it, because we were like, when we first started talking about it, we're like, okay, we just want one level and we want a boss. Mm-hmm. And like, towards the end, we were both like, came to terms like, well, maybe we won't get the boss in there. You know, it might be too hard to get the boss. It might take too long. But, like, we finally, like we added that boss in 2 weeks, I think. We added that boss very quickly at the end.
That was a good boss battle. Really turned that over quickly. Like, I was, like, telling Josh,
well, same with
like,
the sprites, too.
This,
I mean,
you're going to give this to Ken. You're going to throw this all in his lap. And he's, like, got a baby.
Some HP to the thing.
His baby actually wasn't even born by this point, I think.
Right. Well, the baby got, wait, when did the baby got born? August 25th.
Yeah. So
is that when the boss was born?
It was very early, either around that time
now.
He had to like reproduce. Yeah. So we were kind of I was on him. I was like,
I had practically done all the boss animations, and then I basically went back and redone them. Like it was just.
Well, it was good. It was like stripped down. It was a stripped down version of what we thought the boss would be, because I remember we were all in my basement talking about the boss.
Yeah,
we had all these ideas. Like,
I still have all of
this chair.
I have most of those things actually animated. I just didn't give them to you. They're coming.
Right.
Yeah. We developed the process, him and myself, when we were the bare boss character you see in the game. he's not all the sprites you see. He's got, like, I forget what it is, 188 frames of like, particular sprites.
Like, unique frames, yeah.
And I helped him with making it traditional, like, style. So he drew out entire animations, and then I would go in and try to ink them, and he had to train me, like, traditionally on how to, like, do pixel art.
So she did help with that, yeah.
But
yeah.
We didn't even end up putting that into the demo.
Yeah, most of that stuff never made it in. Just kind of a couple things. Like, his idol is, like, run, his, like, basic attack and a bite, you know, two attacks, run, idle, hurt animation, death animation.
Yep.
That's all I made it in. Yeah, and, you know.
Yeah, definitely two tiers.
And we were looking, we're like, all right, dude, let's just like go, let's go look at like, you know, I always use like Owlboy as a good reference because I'm like, it's the art in it is really highly acclaimed and it's really well polished and it's a well received game. So I look back and I'm like, I gotta, you know, hit a high level. So we would go and pull aside sprites that have already been taken out of Owlboy and look at them and look at the boss sprites and we're like, yeah, our sprite count is so huge compared to most of these other games.
Yeah, you compare it to any game.
Yeah,
the
boss has a ton of sprites. Not even talking about the players, all this context sensitive. So I think like what our strength was is that like not necessarily that we had the highest color count or the largest sprites or the most, even the highest frame rate for the sprite animations per se, but just the most context, the most like context sensitive, or the most different states of animation, the most different kind of.
The closest thing you could probably find would be like maybe like Cuphead or something with the number of like animation.
No, but see, Cuphead's like, different even, though because
that's like more hand drawn.
Definitely, and way more like fluid.
What's Cuphead? What's different? The difference between Cuphead is like they do a fewer number of animated states, but then they do a lot more frames of each state.
So smoother,
ours is kind of different in that we have maybe fewer numbers of frames per individual animation, but we have so many unique animations that fit all these different contexts. Yeah, so that the end result is that we want it to feel kind of alive and feel well animated, just in the fact that there's complexity to the character and its behavior, and not like compared to a lot of sprite art games, we're really trying to make sure there's a sprite for every little circumstance. You know, when you're pushing something that you can't get pushed, or if you're like tilting on the edge and you're gonna fall off teetering like Sonic the Hedgehog was.
Yeah,
you could add that. You know, I could add that still. Yeah, I know it's not even in. I'm just saying.
All right.
One of the things that I really like about our game is that you could do all these kind of things and then also do other things while you're doing those things. You know, as descriptive as that sounds, but
very
kind
nice.
Of like an intersection of these kind of all these different states. So that requires all these different animations, and I guess that's what we feel like maybe it's the strong suit here is we're really like making sure there's a lot of unique animation. But that's kind of tangential. But yeah, so basically the game itself, we really buckled down like 8 months ago, got a nice good push, kind of took a little bit of a break. You know, and then kind of
pushed again.
Did another like last minute deadline push.
Yeah, because the big push was like submitting the demo to Vig to get it approved to be into it.
Yeah.
And then once we got into it, we're like, all right, now we gotta like add more.
Right, how to make it better for the thing, and the deadlines really help because without the deadlines, I could just be in like a nebulous creative space forever.
Right. Yeah, it really helped us kind of get to the end result. Like, we there were so many points where we were like, we would get into like the minutiae of a lot of different things, and we'd be like, no, just push through it. We just gotta get it on the
page.
We gotta get it on the page. We gotta get it on paper, and then we can kind of sculpt it as we go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I kind of tackle most things that I do.
I know, I'm trying to have things like be perfect on first iteration.
I'm a graphic designer, so I'm just like, I don't, that's my like thing. I just like get it on the page and then mess with it, make it look good. You know, make it feel good.
Yeah. How many times have I redrawn the character at this point in the grand scheme of
right.
You can only see.
Wow. Remember that, the Mickey Mouse looking squirrel that we had?
We had a squirrel.
Originally.
You can take an entire thing, collage it, just watch his face morph over time.
But you said originally we had a squirrel.
Oh, not in this build. Originally. This like build one, I'm calling this, of like, that was like the first like 5 years of us like hanging out and like just throwing ideas against the wall and seeing what sticks.
We had this like turquoise or teal colored squirrel with like a magenta poncho. I love squirrel, just watching squirrels in the backyard.
I remember you were sending me all these squirrel videos back there. Like, look at this squirrel, look at what he did. He'd like run across a wire, steal some seeds like from like a bird, like a birdhouse, and like fucking flip back.
Yeah, they have those like those squirrel proof things, and they'd be hanging on for dear life at like spinning at like G-force. levels, like there's like a NASA experiments.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Like squirrels are obviously they have like this awesome agility, and
definitely,
and so that was something that we like I had latched onto. But we had honestly,
Animal Planet
had, like,
is definitely a huge
Animal Planet. Yeah, for sure. Animal, yeah, all those things. Yeah, just watching those on loop.
Planet Earth.
Yeah,
we're gonna take a short break from the interview, but when we come back, we're going to dive into how the character of Feral Frontier was created. But right now, we are going to spin something from our buddies in Rhode Island, Lightning Bolt, from their album Ride the Sky. This is 13 Monsters.
Culture-saturated world, what's a nerd to do?
Hang out with your good pals on Nerdy Show, that's what.
Our flagship podcast is a weekly celebration of the multifaceted D20 that is the modern nerd.
When we're not devising horrors that combine VR and spiders or taste-testing weird food, we're discussing the latest geek happenings, digging into our deepest nerd niches,
or interviewing a celebrity or two.
Head to nerdyshow.com or find us on iTunes and experience a multiverse of awesome.
We'll be right back.
From their album Blackluster Songs, that was The Rodeo Carburetor with Gang of Pirates, one of my favorite Japanese punk bands. Sadly, they are no longer together. They're off doing various solo projects. But let's forget about that for now, and let us dive right back into our interview with our buddies over at Dirty Beast Games.
So when did you decide upon the box then? Like, when did that come into play?
That was all you.
Yeah. I decided that probably, like, pretty much a year ago, maybe, at this point.
I mean, that's your favorite animal, right?
Yeah, it's been my favorite animal, like, forever. And, like, when I was a little kid, I liked drawing them, and I loved playing games with them in it. And I'd always liked it, and I just kind of tell myself, like, you know, I'm not gonna draw that just because I've done it so many times. And that's why I went with the squirrel at one point or whatever, but it's like, who am I kidding? Like,
it's just going to be a fox.
I mean,
think
about, like,
all the video games that have fox characters.
I know,
Cloud.
Yeah, I know. Right. I know.
Tails. Mm-hmm. Recently, you had a Lucky's tail. You've also Seasons After Fall had the fox character.
Fox and Forest.
Fox and Forest.
Which is funny, really. That came up.
I didn't know that existed.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We didn't know that. It was funny. We were making this game, and then we had the whole first level bit, like, after we submitted to Fig and we got in, and then I saw this game. I was on Reddit one day, and then it, like, popped up. It was like Fox and Forest. I was like, what is this game? And I looked at it. I was like, wait a second, this looks fucking just like our game. What the hell?
I actually brought this up across the Fig, but then I said, like, this is better. Like, I played Fox and Forest at PAX East for, like, 5 minutes, and I'm like, I'm done. This is kind of boring. I never felt that way while I was playing your demo.
That's awesome. That's nice. Because we almost, like, well, I almost, I was, like, ready to write it. I was like, dude, we got to change the main character, dude. It can't be a fox. And I was like, dude, look at it. And he's in a forest.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game.
I was like, dude, the backgrounds will be unique, and that's how we'll differentiate.
Right, yeah. We're going to make it way more, like, sci-fi themed.
Yeah.
You know, Fox and Forest is more of like a fable, and a storybook kind of game. Which is like, that's cool. That'll be its own thing, and we're going to make it more like a Mega Man. Like, we want it to be eventually like a post-apocalyptic.
I think originally, very simple Fox character, and then I think Ken was the one who was actually pushing to take the character and make him a little bit more unique. We did.
Right.
Josh did.
Yeah, I was like, what if we gave him like a cyborg eye? What if we gave him like an eye patch?
I have given him a cyborg eye. I made him into, like, Snake from Metal Gear Solid. I've turned him into everything.
Yeah.
And, like, I just came back to the same thing. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
These are the colors. That's just how he looks. And, you know,
He's very unique looking. I mean, he's definitely more, like, I love his eyes.
He was an Arctic fox at one point.
We're almost like, all right, let's just turn him, like, completely white.
Yeah,
he's going to be, like, a white fox.
You
want him to be, like, a lab rat, right? We're going to make him have, like, red eyes.
Maybe he's more like a lab rat. He's a science experiment.
But then we're just like, fuck it. We're just going to push forward with what we have.
So I would say, like, if you rewound far enough in my life, you'll see, like, me, I've been incubating this character one way or another. Like, forever. And, I've been drawing him my whole life one way or another. And so I think, like, one day I just kind of, like, woke up and came up with this, like, glove idea, which now has kind of been incorporated into the new character design before rehauling him.
Yeah.
And that kind of, like, maybe that makes him a little bit more different than he was at Lost and Fig.
Yeah.
So he'll be a little bit more different.
I'm just excited to develop that.
Because
I don't know, the glove, there's, like, so much you can do. It's going to be like a plasma glove, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have this, like, energy in his hands that you can basically turn into any weapon,
anything you want.
So basically,
it's kind of like the ring with Green Lantern.
Exactly. That's a really good analogy. So basically,
you can
manipulate energy into whatever format we want, so it can pretty much be like an all-in-one solution to. So we don't have to be like, here's the crossbow you got, or here's the grappling hook you got. You have, like, a backpack full of shit. It's just all contained in this one, you know, convenient Metro Samus style kind of. Just upgrade your suits.
So everything's going to change in terms of, like, the items and, like, the menu system we have and, like, equipping things and upgrading and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's quite a bit of changes that will still come.
So what is, like, the overall plot line for Phil? We did talk a lot about the whole machine aspect that you just hinted in here. So what is the story in Phil?
So,
it's still up in the air, but we were throwing stuff around maybe a month ago, but you go.
I guess, like, I've written out multiple things, and some of it is like, we're honestly thinking about kind of tailoring it back based on ultimately kind of what the game ends up being, where we get to in the game, and trying to make it match that. Yeah. Because you can get really ambitious and be like, you know, there's all this stuff, and your imagination can go wild, and we kind of have to see where we have to compromise. But there's a general theme of, like we said, there's this kind of like this interaction, conflict, this co-evolution or this synergy, as well as this tension between nature and technology.
Right.
And I guess like we have to say like the setting is maybe more fleshed out than like the absolute plot of it, but we kind of are existing in a world where technology has come to a point where it's so developed that that there's a portion of society of citizens who just kind of live almost as if they are on this, like, you know, I guess this giant Animal Farm kind of reference. And the technology is just so well developed at kind of keeping them pacified, keeping them kind of engaged in this kind of artificial whatever society, in which they're it's essentially kind of this like Orwellian dystopia, so to speak, where technology is like always watching you, always recording you, kind of always affecting you, and kind of we were imagining like I would draw the citizens in this utopia, dystopia, as kind of being like domesticated animals.
Right.
So it's kind of got this theme of like, this is kind of the herd, so to speak, the people who are, they don't really like have the perception per se to understand kind of what's the broader picture of the world.
Yeah,
and
right.
So that kind of separates the protagonist. He's kind of like, he's not a domesticated animal. He's a wild animal still at heart, and so he feels this longing to kind of get away from this artificial, kind of like overly constructed, overly safe, overly secure, overly controlled world. And the premise is like, perhaps he sees something a bit too much he wasn't supposed to see. He sees behind the curtain. You know, we have a bazillion references, whether it be from The Matrix or like Soylent Green or something. You know,
right.
Like, are they feeding, like, we're like, you know, they feeding these guys kibbles and bits, but what's in the kibbles and bits? You know, is there a slaughterhouse they're taking
we don't know what the crazy unveil is going to be.
Right, yeah, so there's a lot
there's
of, like...
It's definitely going to be an M. Night Shyamalan
movie. Yeah.
What a twist! So like...
There's going to be twists upon twists.
We wanted kind of the story to... Yeah. We want to be able to play the story. We don't want... Because there's so much you can tell. And we wanted to play more, so...
And we want it... Yeah, we want it to be, like, play out way more in the setting, I feel
Just
get the gist of things. Like, not through the dialogue, I guess. Well, I guess somewhat through the dialogue, but through the setting.
Yeah, the NPCs, you have these little one-liners they tell or whatever. And, you can read a sign or pick up an item and investigate it. But not too many, like, long-winded RPG-style, like, talk to this, talk to that. But
just kind of visual cues that kind of,
give you your own... You know, what's happening.
Right.
As much as possible.
And I guess, like, if I were to break it down into kind of, like, three acts or whatever of what you're roughly trying to do in the game, is like, the first premise is to escape. To escape the machine or escape the system that's kind of, like, basically got you, your world under control. Truth is, modified under the system. You don't know what's real. You live in an artificially constructed world. You're not, like... That's why we talk about, like, planet Earth and stuff. It's kind of...
Right,
it shows you that, like, brutality of nature. And so I think we wanted to...
And that's step two. Like, that's phase two.
That's the second act. So, like, at the first act, you're, like, in this domestic, overly protected place. And you're just, like, at odds with it in your very nature. And so that's the feral part of Feral Frontier, is you're going to reintroduce yourself into the wild. So the first act is to escape that world, to escape that,
like,
artificial world.
I don't know, I'm going to allude it to, like, Midgar in Final Fantasy VII. Yeah. Like, the first act is, like, you're in this...
Yeah, you're in this place that's just this dystopia you're in a dystopia, and you're just kind of like, you know, you don't want to be there. You just feel like you just don't, and your natural curiosity wants to take you out.
And that's something we want to. We're throwing around a lot of ideas. Yeah, we're throwing around a lot of ideas.
It's kind of reminiscent of the Rocket Raccoon backstory in the Telltale version of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I
haven't played that either.
Yeah, second episode actually goes into Rocket Raccoon escaping from the, like, scientists and everything.
Oh, really?
And him actually getting out there. So it's kind of reminding me a little bit of that.
Nice.
Yeah, so we had thought, like, is he going to be, like, you know, something that was experimented on, or is he just going to be, like, you know, so we had
we maybe he was going to be like a soldier of some sort.
Well, we had thought,
like,
yeah, he could have potentially been, like, what we were thinking is, like, there's kind of a, like, a, you know, the ruling power has all these kind of drones and technology and stuff that it uses to maintain its control, but it also has, like, a military force, and that's mostly made up out of, like, dogs, because we thought it'd be, like, perfect for the kind of anthropomorphic setting. Mm-hmm. And so you've got these kind of, like, police or military style dogs, and the fox is in the you know, the canine family, and so it's kind of like we were thinking that maybe he was kind of bred or raised or kind of a test tube creation to have a kind of like a different role be filled on their team, like maybe like a sneaky stealth kind of assassin type character on the team, and that he's a part of this kind of dog pack, but he doesn't quite fit in. Right. And essentially, it comes to a part where he's in conflict with the powers that be that essentially give him the orders. But one way or another, we wanted to kind of have him have to escape that kind of world, enter the second act, which is essentially the act of survival. Just like going out, exploring, like seeing the world, learning your like first basic survival moves. What do you do to like just like exist out in this world? Just kind of,
you want it to be like a shock too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like when you get out into the real world, like seeing what it's really like, the brutality of the world. And like we haven't conveyed this message yet, because our game's kind of like lighthearted and kind of silly right now.
Yeah.
But we have these like very like.
But yeah, we want you to be hunted, but at the same time, we might want you to hunt too.
Yeah.
Like we had like this one scenario of the story we were thinking. Mm. Is one of the missions we were thinking in the beginning was we were supposed to basically find this guy who's like, he's like a hacker, and what he does is he steals information and redistributes it like a Robin Hood of information of his day, and so to speak. He's like a Julian Assange or something. Mm. And so he's kind of like this white rabbit, right, which has got the Alice in Wonderland reference, and even maybe the white hair from Julian Assange reference you could take, maybe. And so he's kind of like represents this kind of thing outside the system that's kind of leaking and sharing information.
But maybe he's part of the system too, like Julian Assange.
I think
he's totally controlled.
Oh, okay, okay, maybe. Yeah, it's totally possible that his account is compromised.
He's
right?
A robot.
Right, but he's that kind of, it's that concept of like now we have this kind of like Robin Hood of information or something. And so we're thinking like, your mission is to come and kill this guy or at least apprehend him, right? But then that kind of like, you come in contact with him, and then he kind of shares some information that he should know and you shouldn't know, and that kind of gets your head spinning. Mm-hmm. And then you find yourself, instead of taking this guy in, trying to save him and run away with him. And then the whole turnout of that was so that eventually when you've escaped the whole city and you're out in the wilderness,
things get real.
You're in like the wasteland surrounding the city, and there's nothing to eat, and you're starving, and you're starting to go like, you know.
Yeah, we want to have like a trippy, like delusional level where you're kind of losing your mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you're like starving to death, and then you come to a point where you're like, I have to make a decision.
Right.
And you have to like eat the guy you saved, you know.
And so
it's kind of like saying, like, you know, like you have to survive. You just have to do things to survive.
Spoiler alert.
I mean, that might never make it, but it's kind of the idea.
Yeah, definitely.
The idea is the animals like normally have this sort of cutesy,
they're adorable, but
right. characteristic that we see thematically within a lot.
If you watch nature documentaries, you'll see a fox and you'll be like, oh man, why did you do that?
Nature is not so.
Oh, that fox cub is so cute, and then like. But that vole family has a whole family underground.
Yeah,
did you see a grizzly man?
Yeah.
Perfect example.
All that's left is his water.
Okay. So it's kind of, you kind of get this thing where, yeah, nature can be adorable but terrifying. And so,
exactly.
So,
yeah.
It's the thing that puts you in awe but also scares you.
So the second act is kind of like the character. The first act is the character just escaping, just trying to like get away. He knows this isn't reality or whatever. This isn't true to him. So he needs to get away from it. But then the second act is kind of the shock of kind of actually confronting the real world, which is outside the kind of domestic constructed world that is kind of constructed to prey upon the normal citizen. And it's kind of the wild, so to speak. And then the third act is kind of all the knowledge and wisdom and powers and strength that he attained from surviving in the second act, he now has at his disposal for the third act, which is essentially to return and kind of say, be the hero and free, whether it be free some of the animals or leak some information into that system that changes it forever.
Yep.
And so it's kind of to kind of return and fight back and reclaim some kind of freedom. So it's like you know, yeah, the third act would be kind of his revenge or something, you know, his yeah, return. Right. That's the rough. You know, we have all these.
I guess
kind of ideas,
you covered it pretty.
But yeah, I guess we have more of a vibe, a theme.
That's.
We're concerned about the gameplay and how the game works, and we want to make sure the story doesn't trample on that. And so,
although we do want like the player to like feel like they're being a part of the story as well.
Right. Yeah. You want to feel like you're giving them a choice.
Right. Like an experience. Like,
yeah. When you're getting curious about leaving, like I call it the Midgar area, the first stage of we want like. The player to be able to like feel like they're like escaping,
right?
Like feel like they're like making the choice to leave,
yeah. Right? Yeah. We were throwing around
like, okay, you have this monotonous kind of cycle of this day night cycle that you're like you're doing the same kind of job every day,
like quest mission type stuff.
Yeah, but then there's like a little like maybe secret passageway or something that, like you know. Or like someone guarding an area that's like you can't go past here or something, and then you're like, what is in that area? And then like it kind of like garners curiosity.
Well, the player.
You know, and then eventually, maybe there isn't a guard there one day, and you're like, what if I go here? What if I go into this area? We want the player. We don't know how successful we'll be,
right,
in terms of doing this, but we want the player to like be able to like do this themselves instead of it being like, okay, go here.
This is the part of the story where you're automatically
sent.
The problem is
allowing autonomy of the player as opposed to this sort of linear storyline. Mm-hmm. Because with basically the marriage between autonomy and the competence of the player, which allows you to move through the storyline, is what we're going for ideally. Nobody likes to be just like kind of pushed along in a story. Mm-hmm. They want to feel like they're actually talented enough to like.
We want you to play the story, not watch it or read it per se.
Right.
And so,
that's difficult with narrative based games because you don't want a player just sitting there reading walls of text.
And
you don't want them just feeling like they're being.
Well, especially in a game like us that has this kind of like fast, like, you know, physical, frenetic kind of experience to it. You know, it's real-time action. So I don't think it, like, would be great to, slow it down by stories or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our game's definitely, we wanted to make it, like, an experience. And I think, like, you were talking about, it's the kind of thing where the game's going to kind of do this thing where we would think it was kind of going to drop you in and you're kind of, you're a soldier for the system. Mm-hmm. And so you're very plugged in at the beginning. And essentially you're just told, go here, do this, shoot this guy, fight this guy, and you practice.
It is very much like a linear video game.
And you practice against these VR training sessions, and the VR training sessions have these holograms of the supposed enemy, which are just like these figments of their own creation. And you're just kind of like doing what you're told. The game tells you do this, this, and this. I'm like a good gamer. You do what the game tells you because as far as you're concerned, that's what the creators are telling you to do, and that's what you're supposed to do. But there's going to be some little corridor off somewhere where if you get curious enough, you can always walk down it, and if you are curious enough, you might find a little loophole to get out. Get out of the cycle, the never-ending, like, oh, you completed this mission, come back and report for the next mission. And it's just going to be like this, like, monotonous, like, play Assassin's Creed, hour, like, 100. just there's another mission, and you're just like, well, okay, like, this has got to be something more to this.
Right.
I got to break this cycle. That's something that we want to play with, and that, you know, that's going to be a challenge to make sure that the player understands it, and we don't trap them, and they don't feel like...
Well, the conveyance has to come through. Yeah.
Pretty much,
It's difficult because it's like you want, like what we were envisioning, or at least what he was describing, was like this sort of X-Men style practice room where it's almost like you're playing a video game like as you traditionally would in a lot of like
run and gunner games,
hack and slash or whatever. But then, this autonomy has to, like natural curiosity, like Ken was saying, comes out. And then you play the actual game where you feel this freedom.
Like the real game is outside the starting area. The outstanding area is kind of just like setting up the story and teaching the mechanics. And then it's your curiosity and your desire to explore that really actually begins the game.
Right.
That's,
right.
That's the kind of...
Yeah, I mean,
so what we played at Boston Fig may not actually be the legit game itself.
That's probably just
a demo at this point. Like, just to kind of...
Yeah. Like, all. Stuff, I mean, a lot of the core pieces will still be there.
Yeah,
but that's like just that layout, like the game...
In the abstract. That's like after you get away. They see, like, what we're showing is probably the second act.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what that demo was. It was a kind of hypothetical second act slice. which I think shows a good sense of what the game will be like. But, like, yeah. See, in the first act, we don't even have the claw yet.
And so, like, for me, it was just like, okay, what are the pieces that we need to create a game? Like, this is, like, at a very, very basic level, we were just trying to create a game, you know? And I was like, okay, we need...
Is it a game
the
yet?
UI,
It's kind of a game.
Yeah, it's a game. Like, we have all the pieces now, I feel like, that create a game.
We just need to work on our loop. On, like, our loop that keeps people playing that, you know, completing that challenge, overcoming it, and then working towards a greater challenge. That kind of scale of like, that kind of psychological loop you create of, you know, here's your objective, you're going to deal with that challenge, you're going to overcome it, it's going to reward you some way that changes the way you can go forward. That loop is something that, you know, we can't yet build into the demo just because, like, literally, we just haven't got there yet.
Right.
It's like two of us, you know, just doing this in our free time.
Totally,
the game at Boston Fig was very much just where it happened to be when Boston Fig happened. So all the criticism were like, you're right. You know, it's good.
Oh, totally. Like, totally justified.
Let's take a quick break from the interview and play a couple more tracks from their album Dear Blues. Here are the iconic The Michelle Gunner Elephant with Satanic Boom Boom Head.
This is Phil the Issues Guy from IssuesProgram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out IssuesProgram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, You follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing. You can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Screams and moans, bats and bones, teenage monsters and haunted homes. The ghost on the stair, the vampire's bite. Better beware, there's a full moon tonight.
From their album, The Director's Cut, that was Fantomas with Spider Baby. And Fantomas is a supergroup composed of Faith No More's Mike Patton, former Slayer drummer Dave Lombardo, Melvin's guitarist Buzz Osborne, and Mr. Bungle bassist Trevor Dunn. And I don't know if you guys have been able to tell, but I like to export my podcast shows in mono recording. And I have to say that this mono version of Spider Baby does not do the original justice. Please, I always urge you, go and support these albums. Go and support these artists if you like what you hear. This is a great example of why, because you don't get the full experience of the song if you just listen to it here on No Borders Erased. So please, do yourself a favor. If you really, really loved that song, please go and buy the album, The Director's Cut. Okay, let us go back to the final third of our interview with Dirty Beast Games over at the Bit Bar as we finish up our discussion of their video game, Feral Frontier.
So what was the reaction from the people who were at Boston Fig, who were playing a game? What kind of reaction were you getting from these
people? It was very mixed. It was very mixed. It was very positive.
Yeah.
I would say. It was good because, like, all of the stuff that, as we were, like, driving in, saying, like, oh, yeah, people are going to hate this. People aren't going to, this is going to be an issue for people.
Yeah.
All that stuff came up. And that was, like, really the only stuff that came up in terms of negative things. Like, the UI system needs to be totally redone.
Right.
Like, definitely.
I guess what I'd say is that I think we came in with more criticisms than we probably even got.
Yeah.
And to be honest, there's like a self-selection process for people who come up to our booth anyway.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think that we got the people who were already kind of interested in it.
Yeah.
So what it felt like was like, you know, 100, 200 people came and pat you on the back for this thing you've been working on. That's what it like felt like to me.
It was funny. Like, the beginning of the show, actually, I felt like there were people that were a lot more critical. Like, when it was like just a few people kind of wandering around, being like, oh, what's this game? At like 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning. And then by like, I don't know, noon, 1, 2 o'clock, like, it was just, I don't know, people were loving it. It was awesome. It was like, it was way more like casual.
It was getting to a point where there's people who wanted to play who just couldn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had to, I kind of try to like engage with those people to make sure that they were able to come in and play.
And we have notes on everything that everyone said.
Yeah, I mean, she was great. She was like a pro.
One of the most surprising things I would say is I was like watching people behind the screen because Ken had set up a tablet so I could watch people as they were playing in front, observe like shortcomings that they had, take note of it.
Mm-hmm. Although that wasn't why we set it up.
No, we actually didn't set up for that, but it became really important as far as like a data collection. But one of the most surprising things I would definitely say for Boston Fig was how long people stay in the game.
Yes.
Like, we had a lot of people who played to the end. I was not expecting that.
And that was like huge. That was like big for me. Like, because at first we were like, okay, I mean, like, you want a lot of people to play the game, and it's like, is it going to get clogged up? Are there going to be a lot of people waiting in line for the game? But, like, the biggest success for me was when someone got all the way through.
Right.
You know? Like,
to his credit, there was only one crash we had during the entire thing.
Yes. Wow.
Like, yeah, it was pretty
good. That's actually not bad. Yeah. I go to PAX East, and I go to one with, like, the AAA booths, and there's, like, two or three crashes that happens.
Yeah. I know, yeah.
So it was really, yeah. It was
exactly.
Like, we had one other thing that happened, but I think it was maybe related to, like, some mouse pressing or something. But other than that, like, it's just, like, it was
there were definitely some functionality in the game that was, like, shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have been able to do certain things, but,
But, like, there was no, like, real game-breaking, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that, like you said, that happens all the time when I go to PAX.
Like, so many people were playing.
I was surprised at how well everything went, so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, props to you, then. So,
oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. We had a lot of people who were laughing at the, a lot of the text is actually his doing.
Oh, yeah.
Laughing.
Yeah,
it
was funny. Yeah.
So I really,
it was good, too, because it was just kind of off the cuff, like.
I should say Ken, because hello. Audio, I'm pointing my finger around.
But,
well, that's what I like, too, was like the I don't want to call it the camaraderie, but there is this the banter between the fox and the mole that made it just so much more funnier, which is why I like brought up in my article about the messenger having that camaraderie between the ninja and the shopkeeper. And I like seeing that sort of thing in these sorts of retro style video games. Like, it's a game that takes itself seriously but knows when to have a good laugh from time to time.
Definitely.
Like, Rare is really like one of those big guys that do that all the time. They break that fourth wall.
They're like silly about everything.
Yeah. That was funny. I'm glad it got that kind of reception because
we
just wanted to get dialogue of some sort into the game because we're like, we're just gonna we just need to create a game to get into Boston Fig.
Right.
You know, we need dialogue of some sort. You know, we just threw it in that, like, literally, like, you created four or five characters.
Yeah.
You were like, these are NPCs, and they were like, and I asked you, I was like, okay, what's the gist? Like, what is each character kind of like? And you're like, well, this guy's kind of like a redneck. Like, the raccoon's kind of like a redneck.
No, the raccoon's not a redneck.
We talked about this because I was like, I think I misinterpreted that I made everyone a redneck.
Raccoon is like a
the characters rednecks.
Raccoon is like that sketchy, like dealer guy.
Oh, yeah, he's got that backpack. Like,
he's got
something.
Yeah,
he's like kind of messed up, and he's just chasing that next high. We were like playing off of like a joke from Banjo Kazooie. That's why he has like a bird in his backpack. So he's like a reference to Banjo Kazooie.
The possum was a redneck.
The possum was redneck because he's kind of like.
No, you said that.
Okay, I say that? Okay, maybe I said it. Maybe I did.
You said it.
All right. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. You said.
But
which one? The squirrel.
The squirrel is just like the shopkeeper, and then the owl. He could have more potential than where he is at now. But some of these NPCs, they might have more more of an interaction with the game than just some background character you talk to at some point.
Yeah.
I got a suggestion because you just mentioned the owl. Everybody makes the owl the wise one, the sage one.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be great if you made the owl like the dumbest character in the
game? Could be, yeah.
You know, here we go. Let's run with it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm all about that idea, definitely.
Yeah, maybe I do have another character.
Or maybe he just leads you in the wrong direction. He thinks he's this wise owl. He's like, yes, go to the forest.
I like the idea that he's like such an old man that he's like hard of seeing. So
he'll
fly off into a tree or something. You know what I mean? That would be fun. He's You know when the owl comes down in like Ocarina of Time or something, like, so when he goes to fly off,
it's like so elegant.
You know, something like that. That would be fun. Yeah. Well, obviously we should even make it flies is gonna be helpful, but
we should even make it like wicked just like
silly, yeah.
Press A button to jump, and then you press it and it does something else. Like, no, I said press B button.
I don't know what you're thinking.
I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. No,
that's what he would say.
Yeah.
No, but like he just sends you in the wrong direction.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, figure it out your own, dude. Like,
yeah, yeah.
What do I look like, a bat?
Yeah. But like the buttons aren't the same for me. I'm clearly a different species.
Yeah. So I know you still are early on developing this game. I know it'll probably be a couple more years before it's fully released. But my question for you is, like, what do you hope that people are going to get out of the experience of playing Feral Frontier once it's completed?
Have fun. Just have some fun.
As an artist, I like worry about this because I'm just like, what's the point of art then? I'm always contemplating this because I'm like, you know, do you just like make something pretty so that somebody just like, you just make something like pretty so that somebody just kind of looks at it and then says like, that's nice looking. You know, is it just eye candy or is there something like more you're trying to do with it? And so I'm always like thinking about that. Like, people are gonna like spend money potentially to buy this game and they're gonna waste their time playing this game. I want them to like hopefully take something away in the end, take some message, some kind of experience, something away from it that makes it like worth their time, I guess. Yeah, and so figuring out what that is, figuring out how to like basically impart value so that when they're playing this they feel like this added value. This was a work of art, you know. It's not just like, you know, just some sugar coated video game that's just kind of like made to like game your psychology and give you those little, you know, victory cycles that kind of keep you jonesing for the next hit or something, you know. Like, we didn't want to kind of exploit people with a 40-hour campaign or anything like that, or 80 hours of gameplay or anything like that. We just want to give people like a quality game experience that we like when we were a kid that touched us. And like, I don't know why it touched me so much. Maybe there's something so important about it I can't even put into words, because it's like, for some reason it was just so important, you know, when I was a little kid.
Right.
Pick this up and be like, and even to this day we still play, and I don't know if we know entirely why we do and what it's all for, but so this is something I always worry about, like, is it, you know, what the fuck am I doing, you know, if you kind of like zoom out macro scale and like, what's the point of it all, man? You know, the sun's gonna blow up and my game doesn't matter, you know.
Like, I say that to myself every day.
It's all gonna burn.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So I guess like what I want is like, maybe I want somebody to maybe recognize things in the game and make those connections with things in the real world, and then recognize that where maybe showing some things about reality so that they can have a precedent and be like, oh, so this is what maybe this is what like the kind of speech would be like in an oppressive society, or this is what the you know, this is something to be concerned about the potential of technology in our own society, you know. It's kind of like some warnings, some philosophical thoughts,
just bringing it back to like a player level. I just want them to feel like they're controlling the game in some way. It's not like a game that's playing itself, a game that's telling you how to think or how to feel. Like, I want people to play this game and like, even just little things, just like, oh, what if I do this? Like, I don't know. That was always like a huge thing for me. Like, you know, what if I tried this? And then any time that I felt like that I did something that was out of the game's like boundaries, it like blew my mind. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. That's why like the
that doesn't seem intended in the first place.
I would say probably one of the biggest. Yeah, definitely one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
Is breaking
the game.
Our rules.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
The game.
I kind of want that. Yeah,
yeah. That's something that I want. I want people to feel like they were able to expand upon our game, or like even come to us and be like, dude, I did this in your game.
And yeah, like when you watch a speedrun, you're like, wow, like not that they glitched the whole game, but like when you watch a speedrun, you see them move and behave in ways that you're like, whoa, like that's on a whole nother level. Like, that's
what's beautiful, is that you actually see these new evolutions coming
out of
the game.
Experience.
That's like, when you know you have something that's like, actually...
An example to me is like how just like cool mechanics kind of almost arise by accident. Is Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah.
So like what happened into that is like it just turned out by the mechanics that they designed. characters could do this thing they call wave dashing now, mm-hmm. where essentially they would be able to dodge at the ground at the right angle and they'd slide along the ground. And that basically opened up all these move possibilities that would never be possible in the game.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of this like unforeseen mechanic created this kind of situation where the players could free up their movement into a whole other level of gameplay. And so when you watch pros play, you see this dance that's like on a whole level different from like a new player.
Yeah.
And that kind of like skill ceiling of difference of so you can really see the difference. Like right now, if you watch like, you know, pro Smash Brothers Brawl players, if there are any of those things left in the world, you know, it would look the same as like, you know, a mediocre player. The game would look like the same game. Mm-hmm. It's only like if the game's skill ceiling allows kind of a high skill potential, can you see that? Like, oh wow, they're doing things we didn't even intend.
Right. Yeah. Like I want to see people like speedrunning this game one day and being like, wow, I can't believe this guy fucking did that.
They'll probably be like doing awesome. Something. We'll be like, man, that's not how that's supposed to work. Damn.
You take the plate and he runs the wall and then glitches downwards.
And just one thing, we just want to add this kind of random factor to it, like the grab kind of technique that we're adding to the game. We want to have a lot of contact sensitive things in the game that like people feel like, should this be able to happen? Like, even if it is something that we like programmed into the game, like people being like, what if I did this? What if I tried this and did that? And then there, you know, you get that satisfaction of like, wow, I tried to do this and it happened. And
well, also I would say like one of the ways that I think would be cool is I like a lot about like the old Metroid games is kind of how you can beat them in different patterns.
Yeah.
And you can kind of skip this or skip that and kind of get different things in different orders and that allow you to traverse at
and
a different
path. And then sometimes you find new rooms and you find new items.
Well, that's true. Yeah. All the little secrets and things too that you might come across. But I guess like I like the concept that the player can kind of expand their movesets in different ways that will unlock different parts of the map. But rather than just kind of have those movesets be tethered to, well, you have to beat, you know, the grass area to get the first power, which allows you to unlock, you know, the rocky cliff area, which is the second area. You know, rather than being so linear, like, I mean, we haven't made decisions on this, but, like, potentially doing something where it's like, well, perhaps most of the moves are unlockable from like a default position, and the only thing that's holding you back from unlocking it is going out and like collecting a certain kind of like skill point collectible or something. Yeah. So it'd be the kind of thing like, you know, The Legend of Zelda, the
newest one,
the 3DS one, no, the 3DS one.
Minch Cap?
No,
the one that's like a sequel to Link to the Past.
Yeah, it's like
Link Between Worlds.
See, and now all the tools are in the shop right from the beginning.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And you choose what tool to get to progress into different parts of the map. Mm-hmm. So, like, we've thrown around the idea that we'd like to have it so that you could kind of like, get these different tools at, you know, in an order that you would like. You know, like, hey, I know that this upgrade is possible. I can spend this point on the grappling hook or maybe, you know, glide or something, right?
Yeah.
So then, you know, and then glide lets you, and then you know of certain areas where grappling hook would help or glide would help. And then honestly, maybe when you go back to those areas, you could do it with glide or grappling hook if you're good enough, if you're really just good enough with the
moves. Have you played Dishonored?
I got both of the games.
Yeah, dude, game's amazing. And you can, every scenario you can beat in like a million different ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something we want to hopefully achieve with this game, with the move set that we give the character. Yeah.
I think there will be a lot of openness. The grab does offer a lot of openness. I think the grab really does help make our game unique, because a lot of games have attack, obviously, and some games do have blocking. But the grabbing is what really makes it different.
Yeah. Grab pretty well is a game called Shank.
Shank, yes. Shank. I played both of those games.
Oh, yeah.
Shank is actually pretty decent with the grab mechanics. Fun. You can throw them around and, like, ragdoll.
Yeah. Well, you know what's another good reference?
We definitely want, like, a
Mischief Makers. You know that game?
Ooh, I've never heard of that one.
Mischief for N64.
N64,
That's a side-scrolling.
It's, like, pre-rendered graphics, so it's, like, 3D-looking 2D sprites. And you play this character who basically, like, Klonoa-style, grabs stuff and then throws it to jump off of them, which might have some influence on
Barbacan. We definitely want like a pro wrestling aspect. Just grabbing guys. Yeah. Like wicked sweaty.
Grabbing is like, that's the full trifecta of the rock, paper, scissors. Yeah. So and, that's the part that allows us to have a rock, paper, scissors so that when you're problem solving enemies and puzzles and terrain, you're trying to think, well, what's the best solution to get over this? Mm-hmm. You know, so in this case, the shielded enemy, well, I'm going to grab him, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Lots of banana hammocks, too.
I don't know if this, like, is relevant. This is relevant to the original question or whatever. I don't remember.
It's relevant.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you.
Where can more people find information on Fell Frontier and Dirty Beast Games?
FellFrontier.com. DirtyBeastGames.com.
Oh, yeah, at DirtyBeastGames on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, at DirtyBeastGames on Twitter, on Instagram. We're also, you go to Facebook.com/DirtyBeastGames. We're also there as well.
And LemonParty.com.
No, it's org.
Don't go to LemonParty.org. Please, work that out.
Oh, dot org?
Yeah, it's dot org.
Oh.
Are you guys going to be going to any upcoming events showing off Fail Frontier?
Hopefully East. PAX.
Yeah.
If PAX has us.
PAX East.
PAX have us.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They'll listen to this, right?
Oh, they might.
Yeah. The PAX Illuminati.
Yeah, pull your Illuminati strings.
Guys, thank you once again, and best of luck with the development on Fell Frontier. I'm looking forward to seeing what else is going to be happening.
Right on. Thank you, man. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to us.
So cool to be chatting with people who are just so passionate about their project. You know, these are guys that are just starting out in the gaming industry. And to see how much work and dedication that they are putting into this title. Their very first video game that may actually push them out there into the mainstream realm. It's always so good to see such energy coming off of these folks. And I really do hope you guys go out and check out more information on Feral Frontier and Dirty Beast Games. All right, folks, let us head back to some music. And hey, guess what? We're going to play some Guitar Wolf right now from their album Love Rock. This is Midnight Blood Pump.
Kitty, 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 my other cat, the cover, my other cat is Robert, why should people listen to another retro gaming podcast?
You mean our cast, David? We do have to keep this short, you know.
Yes, well, I guess we should start with the fact we celebrate old school video games.
And we have awesome guests and game giveaways. Don't forget that.
Plus our game show and your favorite segment, Random Select.
Don't remind me. Are we done yet?
Listen to our cast, another retro gaming podcast, part of RetroZap.com.
Finally, back to my beer.
Final self-titled album, that was 54 Nude Honeys with Go to Hell. You know, with all these songs I've been playing about spider babies, hell, Satan, and monsters, one would think that there was a holiday that was just about to happen. Huh. Maybe. I don't know. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're in a band and want to be featured on our show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter and the J-pop, video games, and anime amino pages at kingbabyduckesh and on Tumblr at b3crew.com. Tumblr.com. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bash Brigade and Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, and Smashed Rook. My thanks again to the folks at Dirty Beast Games for joining me again. For more information on Feral Frontier, please be sure to follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're a great group of passionate folks that help get to showcase their very fun game all across the globe. Wicked Anime will be celebrating its 150th episode this Thursday, and man, we got something special in store. Can't reveal what it is, but it involves goblins. That'll be on the Nerdy Show site and wherever podcasts get their podcasts on in just a couple of days. And yes, Halloween is tomorrow. Yes, that was the holiday I was hinting at in the intro to this outro. So with that, let's end the show with the masters of horror punk, the Misfits, who have been reuniting here and there for various shows. Great to see the bad blood between Danzig and Jerry Only be replaced with some good old hardcore rock and roll blood. From the compilation album Collection 2, this is Children in Heat. And until next time, this is your King Baby Doc reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps. This is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo, from the Electric Sisterhood, and your host for the No Borders, No Race podcast. Each episode, we play the best, brightest, and hottest acts from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. Every song spun is but a mere taste of what you can expect of the artists heard, so if you truly loved what hit your eardrums, please be sure to support these musicians and buy their albums, EPs, and singles. Places like Amazon.com, CD Japan, Yes Asia, Bandcamp, iTunes, and even your local record store are great places to plop down some sweet moolah to let those artists know that they're doing a heck of a good job with their melodies. The more an artist gets support from listeners, the better the chance that they'll come to a venue nearest you to play the sounds that won your heart. This message is brought to you by the Boston Bastard Brigade, reminding you all to support your local, national, and international artists any way you can.